is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. History was made over the weekend when the Nigerian Archbishop, the primate of all Anglicans in Nigeria, Archbishop Peter Akinola, came to the United States, to Northern Virginia, and installed a man there, the Reverend Martin Menns, as the missionary bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. Now, let me just tell you that what that means is that the primate of the largest single province in the Anglican Communion, and that means, yes, there are more Anglicans in Nigeria than in Britain, that primate came to the United States against the protests of the head of the Episcopal Church USA, the presiding bishop, and against the counsel of the Archbishop of Canterbury, because what was said, and I don't mean with words, I mean by the action, what was said by this installation of this bishop in Northern Virginia this weekend is that the Nigerian church no longer recognizes the Episcopal Church USA as the legitimate representation of Anglicanism in North America. For months, indeed for years, indeed for decades, this kind of collision has been coming together. It's like watching something in slow motion as you see the Episcopal Church USA moving as rapidly as would be almost humanly possible in a liberal direction, while the worldwide Anglican Communion, speaking through the primates of the churches, has decided enough is enough. Now, that's not true for all Anglicans in all places yet, but it's true for the province that is largest in Anglicanism, as represented by its Archbishop Peter Akinola. We're going to have as our special guest today on this program Bishop Martin Menns, the newly installed bishop, the missionary bishop of this group known as the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. We're going to talk to him about what his installation as bishop means. We're going to talk to him about why he decided to leave the Episcopal Church USA. And we're going to be talking with you about what you think about all of this. This is not just an issue of interest for Anglicans and Episcopalians, but for all those who care about the cause of truth in our churches. And as I will say to Bishop Menns, and I will say to you in just a few moments, there is now the recognition that something like a missionary bishop needs to be sent from a church in Africa here. Why? Because far too many American churches and denominations now need to be evangelized with the gospel. And that's the point we've now reached. We'll be looking forward to that interview with the Right Reverend Martin Menns, the new missionary bishop of this Anglican group in North America, in just a few moments. First, to review some issues in the news. Of course, one of the biggest issues in the international scene right now is the French election concluded yesterday, in which Nicolas Sarkozy, depending on which pronunciation guide you want to choose, was elected, and rather convincingly elected, as the president of the French Republic. Now, there are some of you out there who are saying, well, no, that's not all that interesting to me. What goes on in France is a French thing. Americans tend to think that we can ignore the rest of the world, but there are constant reminders that that's not the case. In the post-9/11 world, we found out, sometimes awkwardly, just how important some of these international relations are. And let's be honest, we've had a difficult time with France, not just over the last, say, 6 or 7 years, but for a much longer period of time. Because for one thing, France has been led by presidents who have had an anti-American streak. And by the way, this goes all the way back to General Charles de Gaulle, who was the first president of the Sixth Republic and who had a very strong anti-American streak. As a matter of fact, we now know that he was negotiating during the time immediately after World War II with Stalin over against the interest bloc of the British and the Americans. But there's also an historic tie between France and America, as we well know, going all the way back to the American Revolution. And then, of course, to the First and Second World Wars. But after de Gaulle came a succession of others, most of them marked by at least some anti-Americanism. And that includes certainly François Mitterrand and his successor, the current president of France, Jacques Chirac, who, was identified as a conservative when he ran as president, but in terms of both domestic and international policies, has been rather anti-American. Okay, now, let's just look at Sarkozy for a moment. What does this represent? Number one, we're Americans. We should note that this is a man who was elected president of France with an Hungarian surname. His father's family is from Hungary. You're talking about the first time the son of an immigrant has been elected the president of the French Republic. It's an amazing thing. His rise from rather unillustrious, non-elitist background to become the representative of one of the most prestigious districts there in the environment of Paris, and then eventually to work through different ministerial posts in the French government, now to be elected the president of the Republic. One of the things that was said about Mr. Sarkozy as he was rising through the French system is that no grandson of a Hungarian would become the president of the Republic. It has now happened. There's some other things, and one of the things about Sarkozy that I find most interesting is that this is a man who is known for speaking his mind. And, you know, we often speak in this country, those who do straight talking or you know, tell us the straight stuff. But I guarantee you, there is not an American politician who comes close to Nicolas Sarkozy in terms of bluntness and plain speaking. This is a man who's published a major book entitled Testimony, France in the 21st Century, in which he set out his agenda. I want you to hear just a little bit about the English translation, the foreword to this that was made, obviously, with Mr. Sarkozy's permission. He's written a preface to the American edition. He says this: France and America are bound together by unbreakable historical links. People often forget that the Revolutionary War, which led to the creation of the United States, was long and difficult and that its outcome was uncertain for some time. But France was right there at America's side for the decisive Battle of Yorktown in 1781, and it was a young Frenchman, Lafayette, who led the final attack on the English camp. Without French support, history might well have followed a different path, one that would have been less favorable for the development of human freedom. And he goes on to say, in the 20th century, it was America's turn to protect France's freedom on several occasions. In 1917 and again in 1944, hundreds of thousands of young Americans crossed the Atlantic to pull Europe back from the verge of collective suicide. He went on talking about the relationship he wants between France and the United States. He also speaks of the fact that France is a very different country. One of the things that, that this man now faces, Nicolas Sarkozy, faces in terms of the challenge of being president of the French Republic is that France is an economic disaster waiting to happen. Do you know, for instance, that French employment is basically for life? That if you are hired by a French firm, the laws make it almost impossible either to fire you or to eliminate your position. So you are basically in for life. That is a benefit that the French unions worked long and hard to obtain. But that now means that French businesses, by and large, don't make new hires. And with people waiting longer to retire, it means that a lot of young people have no jobs and they have no prospects for jobs. Incremental change was attempted under Prime Minister de Villepinte and under French President Jacques Chirac, but it will fall now to the new president, Nicolas Sarkozy, to try to do a head-on change of the French system. Other interesting things going on, for instance, French companies, he says in this book, have been discriminating against people by holding business meetings at night so the people who have families can't be in those meetings, which is a way the companies have been filtering people out for promotions by holding the critical meetings at night so that the people who can give themselves more to the company are there, and others such as women and the parents, fathers with children will have a very difficult time being there. It's an interesting new challenge for this man in one of Europe's oldest countries and one of the countries most important to European civilization. So why do we as Christians need to take note of this? It's because, in all candor, we need to be praying for the success of Nicolas Sarkozy as the president of the French Republic. It's not just important for France, but it's important for all of us, because as France goes, so to some extent Europe goes. And that's of critical and crucial importance to us all. Let's face it, one of the biggest challenges that he now faces is the rise of Muslim influence. Yesterday, the BBC reported that there may be as many as 10% of all French citizens now Muslim, or at least all those residing in France may now be Muslim. But because they do not count them that way, they're not actually sure. But they do know this: the birth rates among Muslims are vastly outstripping those of the native French, leading to some real challenges, as we now know. A report has just come out, by the way, in this country from the Institute for Jewish and Community Research, indicating that 53% of non-evangelical university faculty say that they hold negative or unfavorable views of evangelical Christians. Now, what this group notes is that the group of evangelical Christians represents the only major religious denomination to be viewed negatively by a majority of academics, that is, of faculty members in the United States. And the next time you hear that there's no bias against evangelical Christianity in higher education, just realize that this research was done by not an evangelical group. This was the Institute for Jewish and Community Research. And it reveals this open antipathy. 53% reported themselves voluntarily that they hold negative views of American evangelicals. Obviously a challenge for evangelicals, but also a chilling reminder of what some of this bias and discrimination looks like in the hallowed halls of America's colleges and universities. We'll be back to talk with the newest bishop in America, Bishop Martin Mins, on the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The break in the Anglican Communion has now happened. It may not be worldwide and visible to all, but to anyone who had eyes to see, what took place this past weekend in suburban Washington, D.C., was, as we have often used this phrase before, a shot heard around the world. The primate of all the Nigerians, that is, of all Nigerian Anglicans, Archbishop Peter Akinola, came to the United States and installed the Right Reverend Martin Mins as missionary bishop for the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. The background of this, of course, has been building for decades. What has happened, especially since World War II, is that the Episcopal Church USA has been moving decidedly to the left, one issue after another. Just in the last 5 to 6 years, this is the denomination that has installed and consecrated an openly homosexual man as the Bishop of New Hampshire. This is also a group that has elected a woman, a very progressive woman, a very liberal woman, the Right Reverend Catherine Jeffords Shorey, as the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA. This is a denomination that it has received several pleas from the Anglican Communion in the form of a report known as the Windsor Report and in the form of ultimata, that is, ultimatums set forth by several of the primates of the church meeting at Dar es Salaam in Tanzania just a few weeks ago. The Episcopal Church USA is not going to do what the Anglican Communion has requested. And, you know, I've had all kinds of people write in, by the way, and say the Anglican Communion doesn't have, you know, a representation to request. It only has primates and all the rest. Let's just talk turkey here. The bottom line is that someone representing the Anglican Communion has asked someone that is the leadership of the Episcopal Church USA to do something, and the American church has said no. There's no way around that fundamental fact. That is the fact that led to this particular action taking place in suburban Washington over the weekend. Martin Mins, by the way, was the former rector of the Truro Church in Fairfax, Virginia, there since 1991. And he was installed as what is known as the missionary bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. He is originally from England. He and his wife Angela are the parents of 5 children and 12 grandchildren. We are expecting to have him on here momentarily for a live interview with this program. Obviously, this is history in the making. Now, I've written about this at my website at albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R.com. My article was entitled, Anglican Missionary Bishop Named for America, The Schism Arrives. By the way, every time that word comes up, I hear from listeners who say it's supposed to be pronounced this way or that way. Actually, the dictionary says it's schism, schism, you name it, whatever it is. And the most common pronunciation when it comes to a denomination or a church is schism. Whatever it has happened. It is a cleavage. It is a break. What is now happening in the Anglican Communion is that the Nigerian church effectively has said to the American church, we don't recognize you. We no longer consider ourselves in fellowship and communion with you. Your embrace of non-biblical, non-gospel teachings and practices has made it impossible for us to remain in communion with you. You have refused to correct yourself. You have refused to repent. And therefore, there is, by the action of this Nigerian archbishop, a new bishop in the United States called a missionary bishop, representing a new Anglican group in the United States known as the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. Ultimately, this group is still under the oversight of Archbishop Akinola in Nigeria. There was a fascinating story about this in the Washington Post. Michelle Borstein reported, and I quote, a powerful Nigerian Anglican archbishop defied top church leaders yesterday by coming to Northern Virginia and installing as one of his bishops a local minister who recently broke with the U.S. church after accusing it of being too liberal. The festive ceremony thrilled those who believe the U.S. church has become too permissive, but highlighted divisions that threaten to crack the Anglican communion. Now, the background to this is the fact that leaders here, most especially the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, Catherine Jeffords Shorey, and leaders in London, most particularly Robin Williams, Archbishop of Canterbury, ask Archbishop Akinola not to do this. But he did it anyway. They asked him not to come. But he came anyway. And that history was made. We have on the phone right now with us Bishop Martin Menz, the new missionary bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. Bishop Menz, welcome.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm very glad to welcome you to the program. We've been discussing the decades-long progression of events that led up to this. But just to ask you, because I know this is the question you must right now be most frequently asked, why were you elected and installed as this missionary bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America? Why?
Well, I believe because the House of Bishops of the Church of Nigeria felt that I was the man that the Lord would have serve this particular group of people at this time. I put it down to God's will. It's clearly nothing that I was particularly looking for or expecting. But I see it as a call from the church to serve the church.
Well, I can appreciate that tremendously, Bishop. But why the Convocation of Anglicans in North America rather than the Episcopal Church USA?
Well, because we want to remain part of the Anglican Communion. We want to be able to hold to that faith, and we believe that the Episcopal Church, as it's presently being led, is heading in a different direction, one that we can't follow.
Well, I think that honesty is very, very important here, and it's something that I greatly respect, because rather than suggesting that this is something other than what it is, am I right in assuming that Archbishop Akinola was basically saying that he no longer recognizes the Episcopal Church USA as being a church with whom he is in fellowship?
I think that's been something which has been declared for quite a while. The Church of Nigeria bishops met, actually, I think it was after the 2003 actions of the General Convention of the Episcopal Church, and declared themselves to be in broken communion. And that's a very serious declaration, which they took after a great deal of prayer and reflection. And so in that sense, there has been a broken relationship since then.
I think that's a very helpful clarification. So the actual declaration that the Nigerian church is out of fellowship with the American church, the Episcopal Church USA, came as far back as 2003.
I don't have in front of me the exact date of when it was. It may have been late 03, beginning of 04, but it basically in that era. So that this has been a battle. The church is divided. The question is, how do we get back together? And that's been an action that the leadership of the Anglican community has been wrestling with for, well, since that time. They've had numerous meetings and reports and recommendations, and so far it seems that the gap is getting wider, not narrower.
Lamentably so, and we have followed those developments on this program. Bishop Menz, I've known of your ministry at the Truro Church there in Fairfax, and I appreciate the conviction that you have brought to the decisions made by your church and by yourself in recent years and months. I want to ask you about your hopes for this new group, the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. You are now the missionary bishop of this group, 34 congregations, I understand. I know you must hope to grow. What do you hope to see come out of this?
Well, I believe that the gospel is indeed never been more important and never more needed right now, and we want to be basically winsome congregations of people who will share the love of Christ and where it's attractive and life-transforming. I had the privilege of preaching on Saturday, and I identified what I saw as three themes for us. The first is radical inclusion, and that we believe that we have a gospel for all the world, all kinds of people. And the second is profound transformation. And by that we mean that everyone's welcome, but indeed we believe the Lord's about transformation, every one of us, and then inspired service. Because we really do believe the Lord wanted to show his love in practical ways. So those are the three themes that I wanted to live out in a way that really demonstrates the gospel to the world around us.
Well, we're very thankful you came on the program today. Hopefully you can stay with us just a few minutes longer. I think there are a lot of questions about this. One of them is the watershed issue of biblical authority. Obviously, your church is going to have to take a position, has taken a position on biblical authority, very different than that of the Episcopal Church USA. It gets right to many of the issues facing other denominations as well. Folks, to join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Our guest today, the Right Reverend Martin Minns, who is now the missionary bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America. The installation of Bishop Minns over the weekend in suburban Washington, D.C. is a shot heard around the world in the Anglican Communion. It's big news here, and we've been talking on this program for weeks and months about what this kind of action would mean. I mentioned just before going to the interview with Bishop Minns that the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, Catherine Jeffords Shorey, had sent a letter. Actually, the letter was posted on the website of the ECUSA in terms of their media release, and she had called upon Archbishop Akinola not to come and suggested this was breaking Anglican precedents and all the rest. He wrote a letter back to her. I want to read to you one paragraph, and then I want to ask Bishop Minns to speak to it. He said this in his letter. This is Bishop Archbishop Peter Akinola of Nigeria. He said, "It is my heartfelt desire, and indeed the expressed hope of all the primates of the communion, that the Episcopal Church will reconsider its actions and make such special measures no longer necessary. This is the only way forward for full restoration into fellowship with the rest of the communion. Further, I renew the pledge I made to your predecessor, Presiding Bishop Frank Griswold, that the Church of Nigeria will be the first to restore communion on the day that your province abandons its current unbiblical agenda. Until then, we have no other choice than to offer our assistance and oversight to our people and all those who will not compromise the faith once for all delivered to the saints." End quote. Of course, there the Archbishop quoting Jude, verse 3. Now, Bishop Minns, those are very strong words.
Well, they're words that really are echoing what has been said in various forms for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, they are essentially reflecting the themes of a Windsor report that was put together, that there really is a sort of united conviction around the communion that the Episcopal Church has headed in a direction that they cannot go, and therefore invited them to turn around and come back.
Well, I think the language there is very clear. The invitation to come back, Archbishop Akinola's statement that if the church does change its ways, the Church of Nigeria be the very first to recognize that and welcome them back into full communion. But I think one of the reasons I especially respect Archbishop Akinola is that he means what he says. And here he uses very strong language. He speaks of the Episcopal Church, and he says, until the day your province abandons its current unbiblical agenda, these special measures, such as your installation as bishop, would be necessary. Now, Bishop Minns, when you look at the future here, do you expect the Convocation of Anglicans in North America to welcome other Anglican churches from other areas in the country?
Very much so. I mean, I think we want to work together with whoever wants to be part of our journey. And we also want to do it in partnership with others who, as you, I'm sure, aware, since you've studied this, there are sadly a whole, there's a number of what we call the continuing Anglican family around the country. And part of what I'm committed to doing is to working together with them as best we can. We're actually part of a thing called the Common Cause Partnership with a number of these bodies. And in fact, we've already kind of established a concordat with REC and APA, again, for the those are not on the alphabet soup. That's the Reformed Episcopal Church and the Anglican Province in America. I think that's a demonstration of our desire to work together. We have no desire to see any more fragmentation. But we must do this in the context of truth, not simply lower common denominator.
Now, Bishop Minns, I've studied Anglican theology in graduate school, but I'm a Baptist. So just to be very honest, I'm an ardent Congregationalist. But I'm a Congregationalist trying to understand the entire, you know, Anglican and Episcopal system here as it would play out. It seems to me one of the big issues for you is the fact that many of your churches may come, but without their buildings. Is that right?
Well, that's some will, some won't. I mean, I think that's one of the issues right now before us. A number of congregations are part of kind of that worship in you know, rental properties and various things of this sort. That's obviously an issue in Virginia, where we have some historic churches that have actually been in their properties for many generations. And so, therefore, our conviction is that out of just common justice, that indeed they are our properties, and we should continue to minister with them and through them.
Well, I certainly hope that your prayers along those lines are answered. Go right ahead.
Your point about your Baptist heritage, I share it with you. And that's indeed how I grew up. But I do think there's advantage for us to be, one of the distinctives of Anglican life is this kind of balance between the Reformed and the Catholic theology that we kind of try to find, in a sense, the best of both worlds.
Well, it has been an honor to have you on the program, Bishop Menz, and we pray God's blessing upon your ministry, and we'll be following the developments with CANA, that is, the Convocation of Anglicans in North America, with great interest. Thanks again.
Thank
God bless you.
Appreciate your prayers. Thank you.
Folks, to join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some Episcopalians or others in America about what you think about this. 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. I don't care what your denomination is, this is about you. And your local church may not be facing these issues or may not be facing them today, but who knows for how long that will be true. This raises all kinds of questions. I mean, the very use of the word communion here. I mean, obviously it's used in the sense of a circle of fellowship. You know, who's in and who's out. You know, whether you are a Baptist, a Presbyterian, a Lutheran, a member of the Assemblies of God, you know, wherever you are, as Christians, you have to face the question of with whom it is that you are in fellowship. There's a certain sense in which we're in fellowship with all who call upon the name of Christ. But there's another sense in which the circles of fellowship get tighter and tighter once we actually start to think about what we would do together. Evangelization, congregationalizing, worship. These are things that reveal, you know, how the question of fellowship becomes very, very tangible. And in the Anglican Communion, given the Anglican tradition of identifying the church by bishops, you can see exactly how this works. And that's why the appointment of this new missionary bishop in North America is such a huge development for the Episcopalians. This raises all kinds of questions. I mean, after all, Bishop Menz is the pastor of the Truro Church, the rector. That's one of the churches that pulled out of the Episcopal Church USA. And that means they pulled out of the Diocese of Virginia. And that means that the Diocese of Virginia is now apparently going to be suing to keep that property. There are ugly things going on here, legal things going on here. You're going to be hearing a lot about this. It made the front page of the Washington Post, rightly so. It's going to be on the front page of a lot of newspapers because this finally is the straw that broke the denominational camel's back. We're now facing what many said would eventually happen. It's now happened. And it's sort of like, I've forgotten the end of the movie now, the name of the movie of the Ice Age. I think that's the name of the movie, actually, the animated feature. And you remember when the ice starts cracking and then the ice starts cracking and cracking and cracking and it just goes faster and faster and faster. Well, this is like being there when the ice starts to crack. And there's that moment when anyone looking at it has to go, uh-oh, something bigger is coming. And that ice is going to crack all the way through the polar cap. And before you know it, Anglicanism worldwide is going to be redefined by this action and by the actions that follow. And it's going to be an interesting wake-up call for some other denominations as well. The liberal denominations have been moving so far to the left and have been moving there so fast that, you know, they're hardly noticing in some cases how they have created this chasm between themselves and those who would use the same name in another part of the world. I mean, if you're in the Presbyterian Church USA, the more liberal Presbyterian denomination, you know good and well that the people in the Presbyterian Church in America are in fundamental disagreement with you over so many theological issues. The PCA being the more evangelical, far more evangelical denomination, clearly tied to orthodoxy. And the chasm there is very clear. But the Presbyterian Church USA evidently thinks it can live with that. But I wonder, you know, how they see themselves over against those who would name the name Presbyterian worldwide. Because the reality is, I don't care if it's Presbyterian or Lutheran or in this case, Anglican. When you go internationally and you find the growing, thriving churches internationally, here's a promise. Here's a wake-up call. They're not liberal. But it's in Western Europe and in North America that so many of these churches have been so deeply infected with liberalism. I mentioned the Wall Street Journal had coverage of this. The New York Times had coverage of this. But the Washington Post story was to me the most interesting of all. And I want you to listen to this. There was a woman quoted in the story. Her name is Marie Penny. She is described as being at the installation service for Bishop Menz over the weekend. She is described as bouncing her baby happily in the foyer of the facility. Now listen to this. Quote, to me, This movement combines the best of all worlds. To be banded with all these brothers and sisters from Nigeria, I can't imagine another group of Christians I'd rather be with. Then she went on, she said that she worships at the Truro Church. Quote, I feel so much more in line with Archbishop Akinola. Listen to this last sentence. There are hardly any bishops in the Episcopal Church that I'd even want my children in Sunday school with. End quote. Now, you know, it would be fascinating to bring in Anglican theologians, Episcopal theologians to debate this. We've done some of that. It'd be very interesting to bring in, you know, leaders such as Bishop Mins and have them interviewed, as we just did. That's fascinating. But to me, hearing the voice of a mom bouncing a baby on her knee in the foyer, explaining why this brings her joy, certainly helps to clarify the whole matter. And when she says, I feel so much more in line with Archbishop Akinola, there are hardly any bishops in the Episcopal Church that I'd even want my children in Sunday school with, end quote, you should hear the massive sound of an exodus of the Orthodox. It is easy for a lot of Christians in other denominations to say this isn't about us. It doesn't matter to us. This is the Episcopal Church USA. It's a fairly small denomination. It's of a fairly elite part of the American denominational landscape. But let's face it, it's very important. We share common issues. We share common roots. We share common concerns. And if the other denominations go the way of the Episcopal Church USA, they're going to share a common destiny. There are so many fascinating aspects to this story, but one of them is that the pincher maneuver that is going on here is putting some people in a very difficult position. And you could say that by the providence of God, history has put them in a very difficult position. Those in the most difficult position right now are those who are the pastors, leaders, and members of Episcopal churches who feel trapped within the denomination. They are Orthodox. They are appalled by the unbiblical actions taken by their denomination. They are appalled by the liberal leadership. They do not feel themselves represented by the presiding bishop, Catherine Jeffert Shorey. They do not feel themselves well represented by the College of Bishops. They do not feel themselves in line with actions such as the installation and consecration of an openly gay bishop. They do not want same-sex blessings. They do not want to recognize churches who do. But they are going to be facing agonizing decisions. Agonizing decisions. I'm so thankful that there are continuing Orthodox believers and some pastors, yes, in the Episcopal Church USA. I'm very thankful for them. I'm thankful that they are there. And I want to encourage all Christians, regardless of your denomination, to be praying for them at this particular time, praying that they will have a clear leadership from the Holy Spirit as to what it is that they should do in light of these developments. Some will continue to stay in the Episcopal Church USA, hoping and praying for change. As an outsider, I have to say, I see that as a very dubious proposition. But it would be wrong for me to say that as a Baptist, I can make that calculation for an Episcopalian. I can simply say what I would do, given my own convictions. But some of the churches that do have the courage and fortitude to leave, that take that step, are going to find that it will cost them greatly. It means that they may have to abandon buildings they have built, facilities that that they have known as their church home in terms of where they meet for worship and educate their children and do all the rest. But perhaps all this should serve to remind us today that there is something more valuable than property and buildings. And that is that one thing that is above all price, the gospel of Jesus Christ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We began by talking about this development in the Anglican Communion, and you heard the name of Archbishop Peter Akinola. If you get the current issue of Time Magazine, you'll see that name again. He's listed second among the leaders and revolutionaries in the Time 100. Yes, the cover story in Time Magazine this week is the 100 most influential people in the world. Now, it's a fascinating list. Under leaders and revolutionaries, which deals mostly with people like politicians, heads of government, you have King Abdullah bin Abdul Aziz Al Saud, the current monarch of Saudi Arabia, Archbishop Peter Akinola, Omar Hassan Al Bashir, Pope Benedict XVI, Osama bin Laden, Michael Bloomberg, Raul Castro, Hillary Clinton, Queen Elizabeth II, Sonia Gandhi, Hu Jintao, Ayatollah Al Khamenei, Lu Kui, and several others, Angela Merkel, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, General David Petraeus, Condoleezza Rice, John Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, at the very least, most of you know those names. Heroes and pioneers include people like Warren Buffett, George Clooney, Tony Dungy, Elizabeth Edwards, Michael J. Fox, under scientists and thinkers, such people as Richard Dawkins, Al Gore, under scientists and thinkers, Douglas Melton, and you have Craig Venter of the Human Genome Project, things like that, artists and entertainers, builders and titans. But, folks, it's just hard to imagine the sense of a list that begins with the monarch of Saudi Arabia, moves from there to Al Gore and Warren Buffett, and then to Justin Timberlake under entertainers. I mean, how can you have one list? Even with categories, it makes any sense here. Listen to this. Listen to how they explain, including Justin Timberlake. It says, it's difficult to explain what Justin Timberlake means to music. We'll just take that sentence by itself. I think I could explain music without Justin Timberlake, but evidently Time Magazine thinks you can't. He goes on, the magazine goes on, the reporter is Timbaland, to say there are those who follow and those who lead. Justin is a leader setting the bar for what's expected of others. What does all this mean? It means that if you want to understand our cultural crisis, pick up the current issue of Time Magazine. And who am I to say that Time is even wrong? Who am I to say that Time is wrong to list all these leaders and leave off, say, the President of the United States? But nonetheless, evidently, this is supposed to be a snapshot of the 100 most influential people in the world. Now, with sympathy, I'd have to say this would be a hard thing to try to come up with, wouldn't it? If you just had a blank sheet of paper and you had to list the 100 most influential people in the world. But the interesting question that comes out of this is, after all, what is influence? How does one use it? What should one do with it? How does one get it? You know, I think if you're starting out the most influential people in the world, you probably ought to start out with mom and dad and the pastor of your own congregation. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.